Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now for the last week of September. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and today we'll be talking with Kristen Wilkinson. She is the Pacific Northwest Regional Marine Mammal Stranding Coordinator for the National Marine Fisheries Service in Seattle. And the National Marine Fisheries Service is a part of NOAA. That's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Anyway, Kristen just gave a wonderful talk at the Port Townsend Marine Science Center Stewardship Breakfast, and she graciously agreed to come into the KPTC studio to talk with me for Nature Now audiences. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you, Nan, for having me.
And first, of course, as always, let's hear this week's mystery sound. Well, this should be a relatively easy sound to identify. Many of my neighbors in the North Beach area have been hearing these creatures quite a bit lately. I will share its identity with you a little later in the program. And now, Kristen will help me share some recent natural history observations from around our area. Kristen.
So it's fall and the salmon are running. Many folks have been down to the Jefferson Land Trust Illihi Preserve to see the returning chum salmon. It seems that the salmon are bigger this year than last. Has anyone else noticed this? If you have, or if you have any factual information on sizes and this year's run, do send us a note at naturenow@kptz.org.
And we've talked a lot about the invasive European green crab on Nature Now, including taking a field trip with our local green crab monitoring team last July. In late August, we reported that a team of volunteer monitors caught an invasive European green crab in Westcott Bay in San Juan Island. That marked the first confirmation of this global invader into the Salish Sea. Last week, an additional green crab was found in Padilla Bay near Anacortes by the staff of the Padilla Bay National Marine Research Reserve. These two sightings triggered rapid response actions by the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. Thorough testing and trapping has not revealed any additional live green crabs, but scientists remain concerned that this incredibly harmful invasive species may be establishing a foothold in the Salish Sea. For additional information, please contact the Washington Sea Grant Crab Team website.
On the Admiralty Audubon website, Daniel Wagner reports on a recent field trip around Ka Tai Lagoon. Six species of waterfowl, including mallards, northern pintails, godwalls, northern shovelers, American widgeons, and ruddy ducks were seen on the lagoon. The group also had the chance to see side-by-side comparisons of lesser and greater yellowlegs. Plus, there were about a dozen yellow-rumped warblers that were flitting about the poplars. The species count for the walk was 25.
And last week, the Victoria Times Colonist newspaper reported on a pod of, quote, heroic, close quote, humpback whales that came to the rescue of a desperate sea lion under attack from four hungry orcas off the coast of Sook. This phenomenon has never been seen before by whale-watching operators in the Salish Sea. Whale watchers witnessed the strategy of one of the planet's most sophisticated hunters as the orcas split into two groups, one to try to draw the humpbacks away, while the other group went in for the kill on the sea lion. The humpbacks took turns diving and slashing at the orcas for about 40 minutes until the orcas finally retreated, and the humpbacks escorted the sea lion to safety. The behavior of the humpbacks trying to save a member of another species raises a lot of questions about why. But that discussion will have to wait to another time. Now we're going to talk with Kristen Wilkinson about marine mammal strandings and what we can learn from them. So Kristen introduced herself as a farm girl from Iowa who became a passionate marine mammal biologist. Kristen, give us a capsule of your transition from the flatlands to the sea.
Okay. Well, when I was a young girl, my family and I traveled to Florida over the Christmas holiday and spent several weeks down in Marco Island area. And during middle school and high school, I was part of the track team. And so early in the mornings, I would rise and go down to the beach and take a run. And I would notice a pod of bottlenose dolphins offshore. And that's really where my fascination began. Now I've been in the field for about 15 years and continue moving forward in this interesting and unique career choice.
It is very interesting. So as the, and I'll get this whole thing right, the regional coordinator for the Marine Mammal Stranding Network, I have to start with the basics. So what is the network?
Our network responds to dead, injured, and stranded marine mammals. NOAA has jurisdiction over whales, dolphins, porpoises, seals, and sea lions. So those are the species that our stranding network partners are responding to. When the network responds to a live animal on the beach, it's our job to assess the overall condition of the animal. Is it healthy and just hauled out and we need to share the shore and respect its space? Is the animal sick or injured and do we need to perform a health assessment? If an animal is dead and in fresh condition, we may be interested in collecting samples to learn more about the cause of death or to contribute samples for long-term research studies.
So what kind of things are you learning from the animals that are stranded, both dead and alive?
From dead animals and even live strandings, each case can hold important information about the species that can contribute to scientific research or even public education. We can collect samples from fresh dead animals and work with a pathologist to better understand the cause of death. We can also collect samples for genetics to determine the age of the animal, to look at contaminant levels. We can also analyze stomach contents to better understand what these marine mammals are eating, and also being able to identify emerging diseases and many other questions that we have are getting answered.
You mentioned in your talk about seeing some sort of trends over the time, and what, 10 years? Is that how long you've been with the Stranding Network?
Yes. I just had my 10th anniversary with NOAA.
So what kinds of trends are you seeing?
So responding to animals on the beach, we're collecting very basic, we call it level A data. So where the animal is stranding, what species it is, what condition it's in, if it's alive or dead. And then we're using that data to create baseline trends. So if there is a high number of strandings, we can see that as an unusual mortality event and then try and investigate what the cause of that stranding is. And over the past 5 years, we've really seen an increase in marine mammal strandings in the West Coast region. This covers Washington, Oregon, and California. And a majority of those strandings are coming from young California sea lions that are being weaned too soon. The mothers are unable to find a prey source to continue to nurse their pups. So those pups are then being weaned early and coming ashore very emaciated and then are picked up for long-term rehabilitation.
So that's a real sign of changes in the ocean habitat.
Absolutely.
And not having enough food, which we've seen in some of the orcas and the humpbacks as well, that they're just not getting enough food. You mentioned sometimes when you encounter a live animal, you do a health assessment and then figure out whether there are things you can do to intervene to help it recover. What's the recovery like and what kind of rates of success do you have?
The good news is that harbor seal populations are very healthy here in the Salish Sea. And so there's really not a conservation need for us to intervene and rehabilitate harbor seals at this point in time. But we do get a lot of calls from the public about young harbor seals on the beach. We do monitor.
That may have just been left there by their moms while their moms went fishing and all is well.
Yep. So that's why we monitor animals for 24 to 48 hours, see if it's coming and going from the site. Do we see an attending female? If not, then we start taking the next step. If the animal seems to be in fairly poor condition in some areas, we can get a veterinarian down to the scene or bring the animal in for a health assessment. We only rehabilitate about 8 to 12 harbor seals per year. We have a very conservative rehabilitation policy just because of the population being so healthy. Those animals are then released back into the wild. They are tagged on their hind flippers. So sometimes we'll get additional sighting information on those pups. And rehabilitation doesn't guarantee the long-term success of an animal. And I think that's an important point to bring up. But we are intervening on those cases where there are negative human interactions, such as people feeding or harassing animals on shore. We do have cases where young harbor seals are attacked by off-leash dogs. And in some instances, like those, it is our responsibility to bring the animal in for long-term care, to give it a second chance at survival in the wild.
You sort of inferred, and I'm going to ask you to clarify, that sometimes the decision to intervene and restore, is that mostly focused at animals that have experienced some kind of human-caused or human-influenced situation, injury?
Yeah, so we rarely intervene in cases of natural mortality. Mm-hmm. So about 50% of harbor seal pups will not survive their first year. That's just a natural mortality rate. But there are other cases that have extenuating circumstances, like an animal being picked up off the beach. Every year we get about 6 cases of illegal pickups. That's what we call them. They're illegally taken from the beach from usually well-meaning member of the public.
Puts a seal in a box and says, I'm going to take it and,
exactly.
and make it well again.
Yep, yeah. They'll put it in a bathtub. They'll call up the network. Well, those pups are normally dependent pups, so they're still reliant on mom for nursing. They're only with mom for 4 to 6 weeks. Well, if we've now just inserted a day or two without the mother knowing where her pup is, that typically will cause a permanent separation. Mm-hmm. And we know that that pup won't survive without being reunited with mom. So in those instances, and if the animal is in good enough condition and is a good candidate for long-term care, then we will secure space at a rehabilitation facility so the animal can be brought up to a good weight. It has behavioral clearances that it needs to meet before it can be re-released back into the wild.
What about rehabbing sea lions or I can't imagine. Do you rehab a whale? I can't imagine that. But
well, so we have pretty limited rehabilitation facilities here in Washington. We just have one facility that primarily specializes in those human interaction harbor seal cases. We also only see adult California sea lions here. Most of the females and pups are in California and in Southern Oregon. So we're seeing a different demographic of the sea lion population here that very rarely need our intervention or long-term
These
care.
These are the young, healthy males.
Yes, and the adult males that are migrating into our area because we have some great salmon that they enjoy eating on.
Tell me a bit about the other causes of human interference with marine mammals.
So every time we respond to a stranded marine mammal, we have a standard data form that we collect information on. In that form, we have a section specifically for human interaction and documenting signs of human interaction. We look for signs of boat collision or ship strike, fishery interactions, animals that are shot. Is the animal entangled in any type of debris or fishing gear? And then that data is shared with our stock assessment report authors that individually analyze each human interaction case. if the animal is considered to have a human-caused serious injury or human-caused mortality, it's included in the stock assessment. And then we can better assess the potential biological removal of animals that are caused by human interactions to try and prevent them from happening in the future.
Let's say I'm walking on the beach, or anybody's walking on the beach. What should a person do if they encounter a stranded marine mammal?
They are more than welcome to call our hotline. We have a hotline that operates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
How do I find this hotline?
I'll give you the number here. It's 1-866-767-6114. And again, that's staffed by operators 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They'll take your name and your contact information, where you're calling from, and then just ask you about what you're seeing on the beach. They'll then relay that information to the local stranding network, and then we can follow up with you directly to get more information and see if we need to respond to the animal on the beach.
So if I don't remember that number, can I Google it?
Sure. You can go to the NOAA West Coast Region website. We have a lot of wonderful resources there to get you educated and inspired about how you can protect our marine mammal population right here in Washington.
And what's the thing I should not do when I sight one?
Well, this is kind of where our Share the Shore educational campaign comes in. If you find a live animal on the beach, please respect their space. Share the shore. Keep a distance. Keep your pets on a leash. It is normal for seals and sea lions to use shoreline habitat on a daily basis. So let them get the rest and regulate their body temperature like they need to, and skirt around them, and feel free to give us a call if you have any questions or concerns.
Okay, and one more question. If someone is interested in joining the group of volunteers that make up this vast network, how would they do that?
Go to, again, our NOAA West Coast Region website. Go to our marine mammal page. We have a lot of information there about our stranding network and who the local contacts are. There's some wonderful maps that kind of color code the shoreline of Washington and Oregon, and that will put you in touch with your local network, and you can give them a call and say you'd like to volunteer and get engaged.
Great, great. Thank you. This has been really interesting.
Thank you.
Let's hear that mystery sound again. Well, of course, that was the howling of a coyote pack. Coyotes use a wide variety of vocalizations in order to communicate with one another. Howls, yelps, high-pitched cries are the best known, but they also bark, growl, wail, and squeal. Family groups yelping in unison can create the illusion of a dozen or more performing together. Coyotes are most often heard around dawn and dusk. However, they may respond to sirens and fire whistles anytime, day or night. Well, let's look at what's coming up in the next few weeks. Kristen, will you help me share a few of the upcoming events here in the northern part of the Olympic Peninsula?
On Saturday, October 1st, the Jefferson Marine Resources Committee needs volunteers to help plant native shoreline plants at the Fort Townsend State Park Restoration Site. Remember that just a few weeks ago on Nature Now, host Mary Robson spoke at length with Cheryl Lowe about this project. Volunteers will get a preview of the newly completed restoration as they help put the finishing touches on the project. Bring work gloves and digging tools if you have them, and meet at the bottom of the beach trail at Old Fort Townsend State Park.
And on Thursday, October the 6th, the Jefferson Land Trust Natural History Society is hosting a presentation on the history and stewardship efforts of the Ho River Trust. Check the Jefferson Land Trust website for details.
For a very special experience, join the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society on Saturday, October 8th, for an offshore field trip to the Swiftsure Banks west of Nia Bay. Expect opportunities to see elsits such as auklets and murres, shearwaters, storm petrels, jaggers, gulls, terns, and just maybe albatross.
That would be so cool. Yes.
Go to the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society website for details.
Well, that's it for this episode of Nature Now. I do want to ask Kristen if she'll come back and talk to us about finding the gray whale that we talked about a couple weeks ago with Betsy Carlson. So, Kristen, would you do that?
Absolutely.
Okay,
I'd love to.
Great. Well, we hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have comments, observations, or ideas, or even if you think you might be interested in joining our team of Nature Now hosts. Email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at noon on Wednesdays, with repeats here on KPTZ on Thursdays at 5 p.m. and Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Stranded, performed by Van Morrison.
I don't know, got nowhere to go. Feels like I'm stranded. And I'm stranded between hello, devil, and the deep blue sea. And nobody's gonna tell me what time it is. Every day, it's hustle time, every day and every way. One more mountain to climb.